Hey, it's Ham Nation time. No matter what day or what time you're watching, it's Ham Nation time. Of course, it's Wednesday night live, but if you're not live, and you probably aren't because most people watch on the replay, we've got probably the most important show, not probably, absolutely the most important show we've ever done. We have got two physicians, doctors, to talk about COVID-19. They also happen to be ham radio operators, and we're going to spend a whole lot of time and get into a whole lot of detail, and we're going to make it just as absolutely clear and easy to understand as we possibly can, because these guys are us. They're hams. They speak our language, and you're going to understand every word of it, and you're going to want to watch this show 3 and 4 times to get it all in. Let's just get right into it. Here's Ham Nation tonight. Ham Nation is brought to you from LastPass Studios. You're focused on security, but are your employees? LastPass can ensure that they are by making access and authentication seamless, whether they're working in the office or remote. Visit LastPass.com/twit to learn more.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This episode of Ham Nation is brought to you by LastPass. LastPass manages every entry point to your business so you can mitigate risk whether you're working in the office or remote. No matter where your employees are, LastPass helps you keep peace of mind. Visit LastPass.com/twit to find out how they can help you. And by ICOM. For more information, visit ICOMAmerica.com/hamnation. This is Ham Nation, episode 451 for April 29th, 2020. COVID-19, the doctors are in the house.
Hello, everybody. It's Bob Heil, K9EID, and I'm in Belleville, Illinois. New studio here. But tonight is a very special night. And we have two doctors with us. They're both hams. But we're not going to talk much about radio. We're going to talk about them saving your lives. But first, we have to go to the lady. Amanda is with us. And if you watch the show, you know what Amanda usually does, and that's watch the chat room. Amanda, how are you? You doing good?
We are doing good, definitely. And I'd also like to say hello to our listeners out there on WTWW. Thank you so much for tuning in. And thank you, Ted Randall, for putting us on your network every week. We appreciate that. Anyhow, we're doing great. And I'm really looking forward to our question and answer session here. We have two great characters. And you didn't get to see all of their interaction in the background, but I trust you. I wish I could play the reel for you because they're getting along fantastically. And this is going to be great. So stay tuned. Lots of life-saving information coming up your way.
Now you're going to, we're going to do something a little different tonight. You're usually at the end of the show. You're here at the beginning. And the reason is, as we start talking to the two doctors, have the chat room throw their questions at you because you're going to be right here. It's going to be live. We've never done this before, but we want to make sure if you have a question, you don't have to wait till the end of the show. You can ask Dr. Harry and Dr. Scott right now. So Amanda will be breaking in and asking those questions. So please pay attention and have some questions for us. First of all, let's talk to Dr. Scott. Dr. Scott Wright, you were on a couple of weeks ago, and you're K0MD, and where are you located?
Good evening, Bob. I live in Rochester, Minnesota, and I work at the Mayo Clinic.
Oh, boy. I bet you have stories for us, and we want to get to those. But I also have Dr. Harry. Dr. Harry is an old rock and roll buddy of mine, but we don't want to talk about that tonight. We're here for serious stuff, and we want to hear your take. Harry, you're in Chicago area?
Chicago, right now Batavia. It's about 50 miles out of Chicago. Still involved with Fermi National Accelerator Lab for Medicine, but originally Chicago at Rush and Cook County Hospital.
All right. Well, we want to hear what you guys know about what's going on. We hear a lot of stuff on the news, but I think you two guys can really nail some things down. So take the podium and the microphone, Scott, and let's hear what's really going on and what we need to be doing.
Thank you, Bob. Thanks again for the invitation to come on Ham Nation, one of the most widely watched shows, not just among ham radio, but on social media. I came on the program a couple of weeks ago to talk about a study that the Food and Drug Administration and the U.S. government had asked the Mayo Clinic to lead on, called the U.S. Convalescent Plasma Study. 2 weeks ago, we were just starting, so to speak. We were trying to find more recovered patients from COVID to donate plasma. And thanks to the publicity from Ham Nation, as well as all of the other media requests and the promotions that have gone on, I'm really delighted to announce tonight that we have enrolled 7,176 patients. And of those 7,176, 3,811 have received transfusion. You can see that we have a lot of hospitals and sites. Those numbers will be updated tomorrow again when we have our leadership call. But we're absolutely delighted at the fact that we can give almost 500 units of convalescent plasma a day through what we call a bioethical framework study that the U.S. Food and Drug Administration organized, and Mayo Clinic is leading with hospitals in every state and in several U.S. territories. So we're really happy this is moving forward. There are no approved medications yet for COVID. Some are promising. But convalescent plasma is one of the oldest treatments, and we hope that it's successful in helping patients recover more quickly and perhaps not needing to go into the intensive care unit or needing to be put on a ventilator. I want to thank everyone who's donated. I know you had Andy Anderson on Ham Nation maybe last week, and he talked about donating, and I want to thank him and all of the hams and their families and friends who have recovered from COVID and donated. And I would just want to ask again tonight that if you have had COVID and you recovered, you're out 14 to 21 days and without symptoms, please consider donating. A unit of your blood can be made into 2 units of plasma that can be given to individuals all across the United States to help them. And the lives you impact may well be those of your own family or your friends or certainly neighbors. We're still deep into the COVID situation. It's still a crisis. I feel like progress is being made, and I think that, you know, we are optimistic that we can get through this, and especially with the help of those who donate plasma.
The situation is, and I want to make it very clear, that anyone that has gone through this horrible time and has had the disease, and they are now, I guess you can call it cured. You're looking for those people because they can help you. What's the reasoning? Is there something very special about their plasma, Scott?
There is. Thanks again for asking about that. Anytime you've had an infectious illness, your body mounts an immune response to kill off the invading organisms. And in the case of COVID, it's a virus similar to the common cold, except it's a lot more virulent and a lot more lethal. And for several months after you've recovered, you have antibodies or proteins in your blood that sit inside the plasma of the blood and provide you immunity against reinfection. Most people have it. Probably 95 to 98% have a plasma immunity. We're able to take the blood, spin off the plasma, and take the the antibodies, which provide immunity, and to give it to someone else to basically help their immune system fight COVID more effectively. If you can imagine, it's like a fire, and if you can douse some water on it, you can get it under control. So maybe you can get it cordoned off or completely put out. And that's how the antibodies kind of work. They boost your own immune system's ability to finish off and kill off the COVID and help you recover. And I do appreciate you raising this point, because this is a very dangerous and deadly disease. For the last few weeks, more people have been dying every day of COVID than of cancer or heart disease alone. I think those numbers are going to start to fall soon, but it's still an enormous number of people. And even last weekend's New York Times had a sobering story about the graves in New York City that they're burying the unclaimed and unrecovered bodies in. And this is just a very sad time in American history, but we are resilient as a people and as a nation, and we will get through this. And we're learning a lot in the medical community about how to prevent it, how to quarantine it, how to stop it. And I think when we face it again in the future, we'll be much better prepared to manage it and to get it over with and get it out much quicker.
Well, we're looking forward to a day when you can come on, and we want you to be on as much as you would like to, because you always have good information. But I'm looking for that golden day when you will come on and say, we kind of have it under control, because right now I don't think they have it totally under control. But the thing is, you're getting there, and you're getting there with the help of people that, if they've had the disease, you need them. So let's do it one more time. Tell them where they need to go, who they need to call if they've had it and they're cured. What do they need to do? Who do they need to call, Scott?
We want you to donate blood through your local blood bank. Could be the American Red Cross for most cities in this country. It could be Vitalant in the western part of the U.S., One Blood in South Florida, for sure, America's Blood Companies, and many blood banks, blood centers exist in the New York metropolitan area. The New York Blood Bank is very large. In Minnesota, at Mayo Clinic, as well as in the Twin Cities, we have blood banks. You can find information about where to donate at www.uscovidplasma.org, the website that you've been seeing below me, my picture on the show tonight. And there are links that will help get you there. And we will. You can find a place, and you can call them, make an appointment, and come in. So if you're free of COVID symptoms for several weeks, and it's been probably 21 days since you've had the disease, and you're free of symptoms, you're feeling better, you can call and make an appointment and be screened, and they'll screen you again. And if you're disease-free at that time, they will check your blood. If you live in Florida, this is a special case. If you live in Florida, my understanding is that the entire state is now doing antibody testing on all donated blood products. So it's even simpler in Florida. Just donate blood, and the blood that has positive antibodies for COVID will be spun off and given to this project, and the rest of it will go for the usual blood banks. There's no cost for doing this. There's no charge to the patients for getting the COVID plasma. And Bob, if I could take just a moment and give a special shout out to New Hampshire. We had a situation last week where two patients were critically ill, both on ventilators in the Southern New Hampshire Medical Center. And through the families of those patients and through efforts of our own, we were able to get in touch with the Attorney General and Governor of New Hampshire. The governor issued an executive order staying one of the state laws, which prevented patients who were on ventilators and others from being able to sign research forms. So their families were able to enroll them. And we've heard that one of those for sure was able to come off the ventilator. Don't know if it was related to the plasma. We hope so. But what's more important is they got well, and the family was very happy. And so I want to have a special thank you tonight to Governor Sununu and his attorney general. I forget his name, but those of you in New Hampshire will know who I'm speaking about, for the work they did and for all the doctors and nurses at the Southern Regional Medical Center in Nashua, New Hampshire.
Man, that's always good. Always good stuff. Well, let's listen to see what Harry has for us tonight. Harry, you want to give us a little take on what's going on in Northern Illinois?
Not a problem. I want to commend what Mayo's doing. I mean, that business of looking at the antigen antibodies and collecting the plasma from patients that have recovered. Maybe I hate to use this cliche because it's starting to sound like one, a game changer, but it offers a lot to be said. Illinois has had, particularly the Cook County area, which is where metropolitan Chicago is, an enormous number of first responders, police officers, an inordinate statistical number of people becoming infected. It almost follows what we saw back in the late 70s when we saw HIV as a epidemic in the United States originally, and we're seeing some of that, although it's a completely different type of virus. But it is causing a lot of havoc. Rush is one of the few hospitals in the United States that was built where there is one entire floor set up for warfare, chemical warfare, and biological agents. So there's a lot of teams working in that. But we have seen a lot of people having runs. If Scott, if I could call you Scott, said, you know, there's a hope with the Z-Pak, as we've heard, or say something like Cipro, we'd see a run on that. So there's a lot of misapprehension with some of the patients that we see that are doing ridiculous things. Case in point, I've seen a patient that injected Lysol. Not a good thing, you know, not the way to go to take care of this virus. From the HIV land, though, as another avenue that we're looking at attacking the virus, is working tightly with some of the firms like Abbott, Gilead, and so on antiretroviral therapy, which it kind of gets a little bit deep to go into it. But if we've looked at a cohort of patients, a lot of them that did not, let's say we're on good management of HIV, and they're not showing the same size with the COVID-19 the same way that we would expect. So that tells us that the odds of using an antiretroviral medication, just think of it as another type of pill to attack the virus, may offer some other help. So a lot of these, the one thing I think both Scott would say and I would say is we're not being impeded, as in a lot of cases. We took an oath that says do no harm. So that's the first thing we want to really do no harm to a patient. But on the other side of the coin, if we do have someone that's in desperate need and there is this last-ditch effort, if we want to call it that, then we want to start looking at these other avenues. And they're going to probably show us promise going down the future. It's a matter of just finding the right combination, the right time. And, you know, we used to say, you know, it's 6-6-15 is one of the buzzwords with HIV. It was volume, quantity, and time. What's unique, you could have volume, I'll do this very quickly, volume, quantity, and time of the HIV virus in a cubic centimeter, if you said. And if that patient's under good control and management, the odds of you contracting that if you were exposed, rendering aid to someone like that, is very remote. But take, say, a pinhead, and let's put hepatitis C under to give you an idea. You are almost pretty much guaranteed you may have hep C after getting stuck with that pinhead. So all of these things together make it complicated, but also we have avenues we could go down. Much as like Mayo Clinic's doing it, everybody's looking at different avenues. The worst thing we have, as Tony would say, Dr. Fauci, is we don't have what we call R-naught in, and we didn't have that from the beginning. And once it got out into the public or community mainstream, the mathematics became very, very difficult to process. So I won't talk too much. I have a tendency of, you know, going on. So I'll slow down there. But go ahead.
It's all just great information, and that's why we have you here. Now, Amanda has been collecting questions for you gentlemen. So, Amanda, it's all yours. What do you have for us?
Well, I actually have some great, fantastic questions. Dr. Harry, my first one is actually for you. Because you, your expertise is in other autoimmune diseases and such, are you extremely worried that funding is going to be taken away from some of those other diseases and everything is going to go towards COVID now and we're going to lose hope on some of our other?
Good question. An excellent question. No. I don't have the crystal ball, of course, and I'm not the man that writes off, you know, the paperwork on that. But as opposed to seeing in past years a decline in NIH, CDC funding, the NIAH, and so on, and I don't know how Scott feels about it, but there were limits, you know, put in a lot of fundamental research. But since we've seen spinoffs, much of what we're doing that's very, very fast in the drug cycle, for vaccine design, drug design, has come from HIV and a lot of our cancer therapeutics. The HIV population early on, before we even knew it, we called it HIV, let's say, we ended up having to fast track, or the term is black box term. So it was off-label use of certain medications, which helps. So to answer your question, no, I don't think we're going to see that. I think we may see an enhanced and more emphasis and maybe more residents wanting to study infectious disease, which might be nicer fellows. So I think it's going to increase in a broader spectrum overall.
That's good to hear. I think that this is – let's try to find a beneficial way out of this, if at all possible.
Yeah, absolutely. There's no question that there isn't an old cliche that they used in the military in trauma. You could, if you have a really bad laceration, just throw dirt on it because it'll stop bleeding one way or the other, which is a very morbid kind of way of looking at something, but you get the drift. I think ID right now, in the issue of biological, whether this was arriving from a man-made issue, altered animal issue to man-made as a weapon, we don't know, you know, who's going to go there. But on the other hand, this does show us, I could tell you everything about the atomic bomb going off and what it'll do, I mean, pretty easily. But a virus like this, and I'm sure Dr. Wright would say, or if it's similar, is we don't know. It is that hidden enemy, and that is a big problem. So,
Thank you. Thank you, Dr. Harry. Now, Dr. Wright, a couple of questions for you. The first one was about this getting tested for the antibodies in your blood. Will you be informed that you're one of those that is helping with this? I mean, you can only say what you know through the Mayo Clinic, but are people finding out that they're helping, anything like that?
Yes, Amanda, the patients who donate know they're donating for this. I don't know how Florida is going to handle the notification. My hope as a bioethicist, as well as a physician, is that they will tell the patients their status so that people can be reassured that maybe they've had a minor case of COVID if they didn't know they had it and have recovered. I had a colleague this afternoon from Mayo Clinic tell me that we were on a Zoom call and she is confident she had COVID twice already this year in January and March, and she was tested and her antibodies show she had had it. So a lot of us have had it and maybe didn't realize it. I haven't been tested. Mayo Clinic is working in collaboration with the University of Minnesota and the state government to achieve what our governor calls a moonshot for testing, to try to get hundreds of thousands of Minnesotans tested so people can get back to work and they can be confident about what their experiences were and they can know if they've been exposed or not exposed. I suspect, based on Vice President Pence's remarks yesterday at Mayo Clinic, that we will see lots of antibody testing across the country, and this test will become very, very accessible in the next few months. It's not been easy to get until now, but there are lots of effort, let's say, to roll it out. So yes, and if you have had COVID and had a positive test and were diagnosed with it, and you've recovered, you can come and donate plasma, and they will use it for this program as long as you tell them that when you sign up to donate.
Okay, well, thank you for that. I have another question. We have a nervous grandpa in the chat room, and this one is cute. KO4AZK says, I just had a new, twins. He had a grandbaby, boy and girl, and he wants to know, Can I give him grandpa kisses? He's nervous about that, and that's understandable. Is that recommended yet?
That's a very good question for grandpa. Congratulations to have twins. There's hope that we can have two new ham radio operators in just a few years into the hobby. Yeah. I would recommend, grandpa, that you talk to their physician or healthcare provider and get advice based upon where you live. The Mayo Clinic really discourages us from giving individual healthcare advice out in questions like this. So I need to honor my employer's wishes and stay employed so I can keep buying my radio equipment to operate when I have time.
Absolutely. Now, another just pretty generalized question was, how long does COVID live on all kinds of different surfaces? Let's say even your radio knobs or this microphone right here next to my mouth. What are we talking? What do we really need to be doing to make sure we're staying safe?
Well, I'll give Harry a chance to answer that as well. But my advice is that you should use some kind of decontamination wipe, a Lysol wipe or something, several times a day on the common things in your home, your bathroom fixtures, your sink. Probably the most common mode of transmission for COVID is now picking it up on one of your hands and putting it in your mouth or in your nose or eyes, if you touch your mouth, nose, or eyes, or as you eat. So it's very important to wash your hands multiple times a day. I won't show you the backs of my hands, but they're very cracked from washing them so often. This is really the only way to really protect yourself. I was doing emergency room work in March when this started, and I washed my hands so much, and I thankfully didn't catch COVID from the patients who were there. I think just because I got lucky and I used precautions. So I do want to thank everyone who's watching, who's practicing social isolation and the distancing. It's working. And I think if you wear a mask when you're out in public, you protect yourself and you protect your neighbors and friends too. So I encourage you to wear a mask as well when you're out in public, at least for the next few months until the rate of the infection really drops off. And Bob, I just want to say I look forward to coming back one day and saying, the cases are so rare now, we're almost ready to forget about it. I hope that's sooner rather than later.
Well, we really appreciate all of your time and your knowledge. And so, Amanda, did you have anything else here before we...
I did. I had two more important questions that I wanted their opinion on. One question. So every state is different. My state, Colorado, is just now starting to open, whereas other states with much higher infection rates are still remaining closed. I just wanted your personal opinions, Dr. Harry. What do you think? Is this a safe time to open up? Should we be going out in public?
Well, you have the real wrong guy for that one. Let me do two things. One, I agree with Dr. Scott. We know for a fact the biophysics comes out quite admirably on my side on this one. We know we could actually have a fomite, meaning you sneeze and it's not protected or so, or you don't put it in your elbow, which sounds kind of funny anyway, can travel as far as 27 feet. Now, typically, we're looking at a range of a typical sneeze of about 6 to 10 feet. We know that the viability tends to be higher on a hard surface. So you always want to look at washing down surfaces. The longest that was studied was 12 hours, which is a long time, and that would affect radio gear, speaking equipment, the more solid-based materials than porous-based materials. So in that case, one of the cheapest things you could do to clear something up would be to use isopropyl alcohol, 90% though, not 70%, that tends to do away with the virus in about 30 seconds. The other flip side would be bleach, and you dilute it 1 to 10, and you're in pretty good shape there, although it may take about 5 minutes. When we scrub for surgery, we want to keep what we use is hexachlorophene or betadine type of materials, and we'll keep them on the hands literally longer. Scrubbing is a big ordeal in surgery. But we'll keep it on the hands for a while, and then we'll scrub it off. So we're using that methodology. But to go back to opening, there is one mathematically dangerous issue there. If, in fact, we see a variant, and logically there will be some variation or mutation and some changes, particularly in insulting what we would say the protein coats and its inception. So on that side of the coin, if you open and you're wrong, that other potential surge could be very bad, very, very bad. On the other hand, I wasn't trained in economics, so I've learned to not think about it, because if I do, I'll think about other areas of music is taking a hit and all these other things, restaurants and so on. So I think from that standpoint, it's very important Would I go someplace, I guess, if you asked? No, I wouldn't, let's say, put on a tuxedo and go to a fancy restaurant right now and see everybody 6 feet apart or 10 feet apart. So I think we're not there yet. And until the governors start following the same protocol, then we have a difficult time with the epidemiological materials as putting it together and matching it, which is a lot of stuff I said that probably is for not people don't want to hear. We've seen protests, you know, on both sides of this. So
absolutely. And that, it's
you
very
know, Amanda,
true.
I would just like to recommend, if you're out, to be careful. Limit your time out. Wear a mask. Wash your hands. Even after you get groceries home, wash them off. Wash your hands. Pick up your mail. Pick up packages from the UPS or FedEx delivery people. Wash your hands. You don't know what's touched them and what's going on. And just try to stay, you know, 6 to 12 feet away from individuals, especially if they're coughing or smoking or other things where they could pass the COVID out without realizing they might have it. So it's just to protect yourself. And as Harry says, we won't know if it's safe to open until a month or two after when we actually see what happens. I genuinely hope it's safe to open. I, like many of you, would like to be out more. I've enjoyed being home. I've enjoyed being some at the office as well. But it does feel restrictive. And if you're feeling a little cabin fever, if you're feeling a little nervous or upset about it, that's normal. If you're really feeling sick or having a lot of anxiety about being at home or a lot of angst and worry, talk to your physician or other healthcare provider. We also know that if you have health issues, don't neglect or delay going to see the doctor. We genuinely believe that there are a large number of people whose health is being harmed right now out of fear of going to the hospital or to the doctor for care, maintenance and care of their health issues, or for issues that they think that might be urgent, but they're afraid to go in. It's safe to go to the hospital. It's safe to go to your doctor. They will put a mask on you. They will keep you separated. If you're sick, please get health care, because other things, heart disease, diabetes, high blood pressure, strokes still happen. And so please seek care if it's appropriate.
Dr. Wright. And that brings me to one question that I had, and this is non-COVID related, and I thank you for bringing up other issues you might have. So this is completely ham radio related. K8SAS wanted to know real quick, is there any RF problem to watch out for with someone that has a defibrillator or pacemaker implanted?
Oh, that's a great question. I love that question. Harry may have a question, maybe have an answer as a physicist, but I'm a cardiologist by day. And I tell patients that if you keep a safe distance from your Yagi, that is, if you're working on your Yagi and you're having someone run a kilowatt through it while you're on the tower, you're nuts for doing that, and it's going to interrupt your pacemaker. But almost all devices now are shielded. And if they sense a magnetic field, they don't turn off. The defibrillators don't start shocking you. They go into a default mode. And if you feel yours went into a default mode, you can always call and have it checked. So generally, it's safe to have an RF amplifier in the shack and to run HF equipment. But just practice good bonding and grounding techniques and don't do foolish things. And Harry, you're a physicist, I think, as well. Do you want to add to that?
I agree with everything you're saying. I mean, common sense prevails. And older people, or I shouldn't say older people, older devices were more susceptible, pacemakers and such, to RF fields, particularly in the UHF or higher frequencies. That's not the case. And Dr. Scott's completely, I agree with him. Of course, you know, tuning an antenna and climbing a tower with 1,000 watts going through it was probably not a very prudent idea from multiple avenues. The only other thing I'd say with masks that people put on, even the N95, keep in mind, they're only good for 20 minutes. After 20 minutes, you've saturated the mask with your respiratory in-out materials, we'll just say. So you better have another mask to switch over. In the operating room, if I'm doing something, someone will come behind me and we'll swap masks out. So that's a very touchy subject. But your own inhalation, exhalation, you know, back and forth breathing, and that could make the mask less useful, less protective, depending on the design of that. So,
all of these questions have been great. Amanda, is that the bottom of your list?
That was about it. I was going to ask about high altitude because, you know, I'm in Colorado and I care if we suffer more in high altitude, but that was it. You guys did awesome. Thanks, Docs, for being on. This has been great, and our chat room's going crazy.
One thing I want to add is we have a very good friend of ours down in the Springfield area, and he's quite a guy and does a lot of international lectures and stuff. And he was telling us that if you do have a mask, that you should bake it for about an hour at like 160 degrees. And Scott, is that true? Do you agree with that?
I don't agree with that. It's not that I don't know that he's wrong. It's just I don't have anyone at work telling me to do that or advising that. And I think that could cause damage to the composite material in the mask. And I just want to put a pitch in for field day. I know the ARRL has not taken a position yet, but I'm genuinely worried about field day. I'm afraid if we get a lot of hams together who are older in age and heavier in size, we may see some of our fellow hams get exposed to COVID and be seriously ill. So talk to your ARRL representatives, and I think we need to really impose social distancing at field day until we know it's safe. We don't want to lose one ham unnecessarily from a tower accident or COVID. We have to stay together on this.
Absolutely. Well, I really appreciate you being here. We need to move on a little bit, but we're going to have you back on and see how things are going, both of your hospitals and offices. But so many thanks to being here, giving us the real scoop. And we'll be back to you soon. And be sure and call us if you have anything at all you can add to the situation. You know you have an open line here, and we'll be here for you. So thank you very much for being on Ham Nation tonight.
Thanks a lot, Bob. If I can make a quick comment, there is the MarcoNet, too, that is on Sundays at 14342 that we cannot diagnose, but there is deans and professional physicians from all over the United States, and this has been the major topic. Plus a COVID net that is on Wednesday evenings on 7.222. So we're trying to help disseminate not news material, but fact as opposed to fiction.
Okay. Well, we can join in hear it firsthand from you guys. I wish you all the best. And, hey, stay safe, stay healthy, and more than anything, stay in touch with us. 7-3, you guys. We'll see you next time.
It's good health.
7-3.
Okay.
7-3. Thanks, you guys.
Thank you.
All right. Well, it's a wonderful thing to have people like that, and they're just common, ordinary people like you. They're ham. However, they are doctors, and they have a lot of information firsthand, and we love bringing that information to you. So keep in touch with us, guys. We really appreciate you being there. Amanda, you had everything together. I guess you're going to go back to the bottom of the list and see what else you have, right?
That absolutely. We'll take some other random questions, and hopefully we'll get some answers. Not from the doctors, though. They're leaving us for this evening, so no more for them, but bring some for the hosts.
I hear ya. That'll be great. Well, thanks for coming up at the top of the show. I know it was going to be different, but boy, what information we got. Don, well, first of all, Don Wheelbanks, how are you, buddy?
I'm good. We're staying well and staying inside and still working from home 5 weeks now. Hard to believe. Wow. I'm going to forget the way to drive to New Orleans, I think. My car will probably remember, though, once I get going. Right now, I want to tell you about a thing that, you know, since we're all now, we have all these passwords to remember. We have the Skype password. We have the Zoom password. Microsoft Teams, if you're on that, you probably have that password. You have a million different passwords to try to remember. And, of course, the thing is, don't use the same password for everything. You can't do that. And you got to have your passwords be real complex. And so that's what I want to talk to you about LastPass. Your remote workforce is a vital part of your business. It can also be a security risk. And LastPass easily transitions from in-office to in-home with use. Your IT team is still the gatekeeper. And LastPass enables IT to remain in complete control over which employees are accessing which resources, no matter where they're working, for unified visibility over access and authentication. And LastPass ensures your employees have secure access to their work applications with SSO and password management. And LastPass also offers an offline mode for both password management and multi-factor authentication, so your employees can gain access no matter where they may be. LastPass makes your team more productive and secure. That's a good thing. It's also easy for your team to collaborate with coworkers when working remotely. LastPass enables remote employees to securely share passwords across teams in order to stay on top of critical projects. And did you know that the average business has 185 shared folders? 185. And it's critical for businesses to consider implementing policies and tracking reports on shared password activity to ensure that employees are operating securely. Seamless collaboration with coworkers is essential when working remotely. And with the current uptick in phishing attacks, you need LastPass. LastPass reduces the risk of phishing schemes by never autofilling passwords on suspicious websites. For remote employees accessing your corporate VPN, LastPass adds an additional layer of security directly to your VPN through biometric multi-factor authentication. And LastPass is in use immensely at Twit. It's very important for Twit, absolutely vital, as well as for any business, especially when you've got people working remotely, as pretty much everyone does now. And Twit and LastPass are presenting Cybersecurity and Identity Trends Unlocked with Leo, Steve Gibson, Andrew Keen, and Gerald Boucher. It's Thursday, May 14th, 1 p.m. Pacific. You can watch this live panel at twit.tv/live. And then afterward, on our Twit events feed, they'll discuss how the new decade will impact digital identity for businesses and individuals, plus a whole lot more. Be sure to watch on May 14th at twit.tv/live. And get simple security across every access point with LastPass. Visit LastPass.com/twit to find out how they can help your business and employees stay productive and secure. That is LastPass.com/twit. And, of course, we thank LastPass for their support of Ham Nation.
Next, we're going to have a wonderful club in Ohio. And Elaine's going to be on here to tell us about their the great club, The club has been around for a long time, the Northern Ohio Amateur Radio Society. And we're going to talk with Elaine, who is KC8FOS. We'll get her on the line, and away we go. And our club spotlight is always looking for your club. So drop me a line. There's the address. Drop me a line, and let me know about your club, and we'll spotlight your club here on Ham Nation. So let's see if Elaine got in here after we had all the switching around. Oh, Victor had a little work to do. Elaine, how are you doing this evening? Welcome to Ham Nation.
There I am. Oh, I'm fine. Thank you so much. It is such a pleasure to be here to tell people about the Northern Ohio Amateur Radio Society. Thank you again for having me here. Well, the Northern Ohio Amateur Radio Society, as you can tell from the name, is in Northern Ohio. And we have members mainly in Western Lorain County, Cuyahoga County, Medina County. That probably doesn't mean very much to you, but anyway, it's kind of a broad club. I think our current claim to fame is that our club president, Carl, W8KRF, has always been interested in various technologies. I think he has a very active mind that way. So he began using Zoom for our board of directors debate, since there's a certain satisfaction to being in somebody else's presence. But during the winter months and that sort of thing, it's just so much easier and warmer to stay in the comfort of your own home. So we were pretty well familiar with Zoom when the need to social distance arose. And, you know, and let me tell you, I understand the need to be healthy and safe and to remain sheltering at home. I understand why people are doing that. But from what I have read and other things that I talking to my doctor, the incidences of depression and that sort of rise because people are isolated. So we in Ham Radio have a real advantage in that we can talk to lots and lots of people everywhere. But Zoom gives us the chance to see faces too, which I think is a little bit more immediate. So we have been using Zoom for the board of directors meetings. We had a club meeting on it. We also, one of our club members, Ann, K-A-8-Z-E-P, suggested having our monthly luncheons on Zoom because we're a very social group. And somebody quipped that we're an eating group because we have a monthly lunch. And there are some photos there. There should be a photo of the lunch someplace.
There's the photo of one of the luncheons.
If you go, yes, and they because we like being together. We like each other. So that is one of the claims to fame, I think, is that we were on the bandwagon with Zoom before some other clubs were. So maybe we can go through the photos, and I'll tell you what they are. That is one of our ham fests. We meet up at the Lorain County Community College. We have a contract with them, though we don't know when really. I don't think anybody really knows when we're going to be able to get together, any of us, for ham fests in the future. It's all kind of a murky thing right now. Maybe we can see the next photo. That is some guys over actually in a park that's right across the street from us. It's very handy. That's QRP in the park. And they get together probably in the summertime about once a month, and they bring their usually tiny little radios and do a lot of CW and bring their portable antennas and have a great time. My husband, Tom, November 8, Foxtrot Delta Yankee, has gone over there, and I have too, to enjoy their company. This is the sign that tells people about our Ham Fest. Actually, the gentleman who contacted you, Tom, WNPDI, he is in his profession. He does a lot of public relations and marketing, and he was able to get some of these wonderful signs made for us. So that's that very generous person who contacted you about getting us on the air. There we are with Field Day. This actually, we did that. We joined another club. The two of us were together for Field Day this past year. That was the Northern Ohio Amateur Radio Society and the Lorain County Amateur Radio Association. I would just call it LACARA, but it stands for Lorain County Amateur Radio Association. And you'll probably recognize that as the shack. A K3LR, that's Tim Duffy, very generous with his time, very informative. He has, and I imagine you've been there or seen it, it is a magnificent shack, and he has like antennas that are just blow you away. And actually, Tom, WNPDI, is the man in the white shirt with the black ball cap on there in the background. And our vice president, Dave KY8OSU, was wearing red, as he is here. This is our Christmas get-together. That's an annual thing, of course. Well, actually, we call it the holiday banquet. That's always a good time, and we give away an ARRL handbook and a fruit basket every year.
Well, I see some really wonderful things that you are doing there, the QRP, the Field Day, getting together. But one of the greatest things that's happening now is the fact that you guys and gals are all tuned up with Zoom before it was cool to have Zoom. So that was a good deal.
Yes, indeed. And if I may, for just one little second, we have three nets. And you can find those nets on our website. The website is noars.net. And what we've noticed is an uptick in the number of people getting on the nets. I think they are serving a lot of people to stay connected to other folks. And we're very proud of those nets as well. Is there anything else I could answer for?
There's your homepage. Yeah, wonderful. Well, I appreciate you being on tonight, and I do hope that we hear more about the North Ohio Club. You stay in touch with us if you have any big deals are coming up, and we'll have you back and explain what you're doing. Okay. Well, thanks so much for being here. Stay safe.
Thank you for having me. It was a lot of fun.
Very good. Thank you so much. Well,
73.
As we hear each week, the clubs are doing more and more with Zoom and Skype, and now there's a new thing called Google Meet. I saw that today. So there's a lot of ways that you can gather your clubs together, and you don't have to put yourself in jeopardy. So make it happen. But remember, send us a note here on Twit, we'll have you on the club spotlight. Just send me an email. There it is at the bottom of the screen. And hamclubs with an S, hamclubs@twit.tv, or my call, K9EID.
Very important show tonight. Probably the most important show that we've ever done, for sure. And let's switch gears now for just a little bit and get back into the ham radio aspect of things. And hear a little bit of the headlines of the news of the week from Amateur Radio Newsline. From Amateur Radio Newsline Report, number 2217, these are the Ham Nation headlines for Wednesday, April 29th, 2020. If you're a radio operator involved in Summits on the Air or SOTA, the mountains may be calling to you even more right now. But what if you can't get there?
It's spelled BYOTA. That stands for Backyards on the Air. And in the land of ZL and VK, the activity eclipsed the height of any mountains or other summits where so many hams would have preferred to be operating on Saturday, April 18th. Some hams set up their outdoor operations in the middle of their vast properties. Others used the terrace just outside their back door. Just as they would have on a summit, some battled rain and others battled noise. Using CW, SSB and other modes, they all battled the malaise that might have otherwise been theirs if they hadn't done what hams do best, innovate in the face of challenge. For Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Jim Meacham, ZL2BHF.
Meanwhile, in the UK, hams are making good use of quarantine time inside their shacks.
Many awards issued by WorkTall Britain are part of an annual program that hams look forward to, but their most recent certificate offering is hoped to be a one-time-only occurrence, and for obvious reasons. It's the Cabin Fever Award, an outgrowth of the UK government's declaration of lockdown in response to the COVID-19 pandemic. This is an interim award that's accessible for 3 months following the 1st of April. For this award, the organising committee understandably will recognise only fixed stations and will disallow grid squares activated whilst portable or mobile. Each grid square is worth 1 point, with the higher scores receiving the UKHF or mixed HF-VHF certificate worth 100 points. For more details, visit the WorkTall Britain website at wab.intermip.net. For Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Jeremy Bucci for NJH.
And a reminder that the nominating period for the 2020 Bill Pasternak WA6ITF Newsline Young Ham of the Year Award is now open. You'll find the form on our website, arnewsline.org, under the Awards tab. The award will be presented Saturday, August 22nd at the Huntsville Ham Fest in Alabama. And that's all from the Amateur Radio Newsline, your independent source for amateur radio news for 4 decades and counting at arnewsline.org. With Jim Meacham, ZL2BHF, Jeremy Boot, G4NJH, Karen Eve Murray, KD2GUT at the news desk in New York, and our news team across the globe. I'm Don Wellbanks, AE5DW, 73. We'll see you next time here on Ham Nation. All right. Thanks to the Newsline crew for the good information there. We do not have a solar report from Dr. T tonight. She had a bunch of things going on today and was not able to get that to us. But, however, I do know for a fact that the sun is still there because after the rain stopped today, just like the old song says, the sun will come out tomorrow. Well, it did today, and I saw it this afternoon, so we know it's still there. And, of course, to find a more expert opinion on what the sun is doing, don't listen to me. Listen to Dr. T, and you can follow her on Twitter at Tamitha Skov. And, of course, her website is spaceweatherwoman.com. And if you're not following her, you really should. You're doing yourself a disservice. Let's see what's going on with the smoke and solder aspect of things and see what my friend up about 3 hours to my north, George Thomas, is doing tonight. George?
Okay, Don. So you're saying don't ask you because you've been
I'm
where
an
the
idiot.
Sun doesn't shine?
No, this morning, I was where the sun didn't shine. Yes.
Okay. But okay.
Just in general, I'm an idiot. So, yeah, probably not a good idea to listen to me.
Okay, cool. Well, you won't get an argument, but then again, I'm not calling you an idiot. I'm just not arguing with you. So tonight on Smoke and Solder, I've got a little project here that, you know, we've been talking about the Arduinos, the Arduino Uno in particular, but the same thing's applicable to any of them. I started a project, you know, I'd promised you a couple of weeks ago when I showed you just a very minor routine there to echo keyboard keys on the screen. Well, we're stepping it up a little bit this time around. Last time I was here on Smoke and Solder and we talked about Arduino, we had a simple keyboard routine that we looked at, just a little keyboard echo routine. Whatever you typed in was echoed back on the screen, and I told you we were going to be doing something useful with that. Well, here we go. This week, we've got another Arduino Uno project. It's the Arduino Uno, and only one part. And in this case, it's going to be a medicine bottle speaker. I've written a little code here that we'll just go over real quick. First thing, we're declaring some variables up here in the top of our code. We've got an integer, speaker pin equal 12. That's where we've got the speaker hooked up. You can see the schematic right here. Very simple, just connect the speaker from ground to pin 10. The next variable is an integer tone pitch equals 800. And I put a comment out here. This is going to be the frequency of the CW tone that we're going to generate. Yes, that's right. We're going to make CW with this thing. Then we've got another integer, dot length. I'm setting that to 120, which is going to be the length of the dot in milliseconds. And we're going to do the length of the dash length, to be 360. We've got one more integer, character space, and that's going to be the same as dash length. That's the space between our characters. Then we do our setup routine as usual in any Arduino program, void setup. We have a pin mode statement for the speaker pin. We're setting it to be an output. So what that means, speaker pin is pin number 12 here. We're going to set it to be used as an output. The next command we've got is serial begin 9600. We're going to open the serial port at 9600 baud. Then we're just going to print to the serial port a little line here of text just identifying the program. And that's all we're doing in the setup. Then in the loop, this is the part of the program that runs over and over. First line is no tone for the speaker pin. That means we're just turning off the tone function for the speaker pin. And then the next line, we've got an if statement. Everything between these curly braces here are going to be executed if this is correct. So if serial.available is greater than zero, what this means, if there is data available from the serial port, in this case someone's typed on the keyboard, then we're going to execute these statements. We're going to create a variable of type char. We'll name it nchar, and we'll say char nchar equals serial.read. This reads whatever is available in the serial port and puts it in this nchar variable. The next line, we've got string. Char string is the name. We're just creating a string variable. That's why we have string in front. And we're saying equals string nchar in parentheses. This takes that nchar variable that we got up here from the serial port, which was of the variable type char, and converts it to a string. Next line, char string dot to uppercase. What that does is converts this variable to all uppercase. And then we're calling a routine I've written here called send character. And in parentheses, char string. Now, I created another file here. that appears in a separate tab. I did that because I didn't want too much code all here in the main part of the program. The way you do that is you go over here and you click this little drop down, and you've got the choice to make a new tab here. And I did that and put the rest of it here called codes. Now, these functions are going to act just the same as if they were right here in the original part of our program. Anytime we load CW Keyboard V1 here, it's going to also load codes. Now, we've got a few functions here. We've got void dot. That means we've created a function here called dot, and it's returning nothing, so we put void on it. Inside there, we've got a tone statement. And inside parentheses here, we've got speaker pin, we know what that is, comma, tone pitch, you may remember that was 800, comma, dot length. And you may remember that was 120 milliseconds. What this does is it generates a tone that'll come out speaker pin, pin 12, at 800 hertz for 120 milliseconds. Then we're going to print to the serial port, serial.print, and in the quotation marks inside of the parentheses here, just a dot. That'll just give us some visual feedback that we've sent a dot character. Then we're going to delay for dot length. We're going to just wait for 120 milliseconds for that tone to finish playing. And then we're going to delay an additional 10 milliseconds here just because the program operated better with that little additional delay. We're doing the same thing here in the dash function. The only thing that's different is we're using dash length instead of dot length, and we're printing a dash instead of a dot, and we're delaying for dash length. Then the other routine here, and this one is really long. You can look, I've got all the characters here for CW, and they're just one right after the other. So I declare the function here, void, send character, and in the parentheses, I've got a string variable. Of course, I've got string followed by the name character. We're using the send character function. We're sending that character string that we obtained from the loop. So when it hits this line, send character, it's going to come right here, and it knows what character we want to use. First line, serial.print line, nothing in the parentheses. That means we're just sending a carriage return. Move the cursor down one line on the display. Next line, serial.print, and in parentheses, character plus quotation mark, and then we've got a few spaces, another quote mark. What this is going to do is we're going to print to the screen the character that we received when we called send character. Then we're just going to put a little space behind it. So if I typed an A, that means it's going to print to the screen just the A with a little bit of space behind it. Since it's a print statement and not a print line statement, it's only going to move the cursor to the end of the line. It's not going to start a new line. Next line, we've got another char variable here. We're going to call this one ASCII char, and this is an array. So we've got inside the brackets here a 2. That means we're creating a 2-character array. That's the length it is. Character, 2.char array, and then the parentheses, ASCII char, comma, 2. What this does is takes the character that we received and stuffs it into the character array, ASCII char, that we just created. Now, a little bit of this might sound complicated, but this is how you do it, and you've got instructions online that you can use to figure this stuff out with. And next, we've got a lot of code here, but it's really, we're just going to look at a piece of it because it's all the same. We have a switch statement. Now, this is sort of like an if statement. Instead of doing a ton of if statements, we just do a switch statement, and it just moves to whatever the case may be. So I've got switch. Inside the parentheses, I've got ASCII char, and inside the bracket, I've got the number 0. And what that does is it just gets from position zero in that ASCII array that we've got up here that's only two characters long. Numbers start at zero in an array, so we've only got an ASCII character in position zero and one in position one. There is no position two. So we're going to take the first character that's received, and then we're going to look down here and find what it is. The ASCII code for an A is 65. If we go down and it happens to be an A that came in here, we go to K65 and execute what's below it all the way down till we hit this break statement. So let's say we typed an A. We send a dot and then a dash, and then we break out of this switch routine. And we don't do any of this other stuff because it was an A. You know, it wasn't a 1 or a 2 or something else. We received the ASCII code for A. Here's the brace that ends that switch statement. Right below it, we're going to delay for character space. So that's all the code to this. So now we'll hit the arrow button here and upload the code. And let's see how this works out. We'll go to Tools here. We'll bring down the serial monitor. The line here is where we type our characters, you may remember. And down here is what's displayed or printed to the screen. There's that line of text back at the front of the program, right there. So let's see what happens. Let's type something. So what just happened here? Well, it printed to the screen, this is a test. And it did it all in uppercase characters, although I had typed lowercase characters. And out beside each letter, it's got the Morse code for it. It's a very simple little program. Doesn't do a whole lot, but we're going to make a couple of changes to it next time, just minor changes that make it much more useful. And there you go. Fun little project. It looked like a lot of gibberish if you don't understand the language, but it actually was very simple, all except a little piece right above where I had the CW characters listed there. Next week, I'm going to step that up a notch. I'm just going to make a few changes, so you're not going to sit through a lot of code. I'm just going to make a few changes to it that are going to greatly increase its usability. What you might could do with that. Something Gordo says, no, don't make it usable. But yes, we are going to make it usable, and it won't be much to it. Well, I just want to remind you that Friday night, Professor Thomas and Dean Martin will be in class again for Ham College. Friday night at 8 Central Daylight Time, 0100 UTC. Join us if you're looking for a fun time Friday night, live.amateurlogic.tv. And right now, we're going to get a message from ICOM. Don't go away, though, because I'm going to give away a radio right after that.
Get out and be active with ICOM's new IC705 and its optional multifunction backpack. The IC705 is your perfect QRP companion, as you have base station features and functionality at the tips of your fingers and a portable package covering HF, 6 meters, 2 meters, and 70 centimeters. This compact rig weighs in at 1 kilo, or just over 2 pounds, with RF direct sampling for most of the HF band and IF sampling for frequencies above 25 megahertz. 5-watt battery operation with BP272 or 10 watts with a 13.8-volt DC supply. Modes include single sideband, CW, AM, FM, as well as full D-Star functions. A large 4.3-inch color touchscreen and live band scope with waterfall. Integrated GPS with antenna and GPS logger. Micro SD card for data storage. It comes standard with the HM243 speaker microphone, and it supports QRP and QRPP operations. The perfect accessory for the IC705 is the LC192 optional backpack, with a special compartment for your IC705 and room for accessories for SOTA activations or just a day in the park. Visit icomamerica.com/amateur for more information about this and all the great ICOM radios.
ICOM invites you to enter weekly in the drawing for some great swag prizes like T-shirts and hats. And all you got to do is very simple. Just go to icomamerica.com/hamnation, and you can get all the rules for the contest right there, all the details. For April, you know, we were giving away an IC2738 dual-band analog mobile with an optional Bluetooth module available. We've got a winner. That is Paul Fader, KC2T. Congratulations, Paul. You're going to like that radio. I got to say, that's one of the nicer analog dual-band rigs I have seen in quite a while. So you'll really enjoy that one. For next month, though, we've got another prize. That's going to be the ICOM ID5100A Plus 2 VHF UHF D-Star Portable that many of your Ham Nation hosts here use. It's a dual-band, dual-watch handheld with independent AM-FM receiver, built-in GPS, DV, and FM repeater search function, extended D-Star coverage with terminal mode and access point mode, DV fast data mode, a micro SD card slot for voice and data storage, and there's a free downloadable Android app as well. So go to icomamerica.com/hamnation after this and each episode and register to win. Sign up, good luck, and don't forget to follow ICOM America Inc. on Facebook and Twitter. You know, it just wouldn't be a Ham Nation without taking a look at Gordo Shorts. Fortunately, Gordo is with us tonight, just in a different position in the show.
Well, thank you, George. No shorts tonight. It's a little cool out here in Southern Cal. But believe me, my ID 51 has been getting plenty of activity. A big thanks to Dr. Harry, Dr. Scott, and Amanda and Bob for interviewing them. Great advice from those right on the front of this whole COVID deal. And I encourage all of you is to get on the air. Forget about social distancing on the air because this is ham radio. And this past weekend, many of you were on the air for operating in your back room, BYOB. Make that your backyard, not your back room. And one more time, this weekend, I'll be on the air Saturday. So I hope to maybe work you on HF or if you're local, VHF. And we had a lot of questions a couple weeks ago on the remote ham radio testing. And I'm very happy to say that the W5YI group has several going on right now. One with Mitch Stern up in Vermont, another one in Plano, Texas. And if you would like to set up a remote exam, go to admin, A-D-M-I-N, at W5YI.org. They are the VEC and Larry, W5YI at NB5X. He will get you set. So we hope all of you stay on the air. Make ham radio happen, and thank you all for social distancing when we're in the flesh. But you know, on ham radio, we can make it happen without physical contact. So, Amanda, great interview. Back to you for your final. Amanda.
Thank you, Gordo. I have to show off mine to you. In times when you have to stay at home, get on these. This is fun times. And, you know, everywhere, there's been just a ton of health and wellness nets. And I see a lot of them transitioning now where they're having even one a day to two a week, whatever. But it's important because our information throughout our either city, county, or state are changing on a daily basis. One day you don't need to wear masks, the next day you do. So this is where you're going to find out information and hopefully not false information. Anyhow, let's go over what I had for you guys today. We had so much awesome stuff before. I don't want to go with too many questions here. I think I'll keep it light. First of all, this one's for all of our hosts. How are you guys holding up without haircuts?
Well,
This is serious.
I did trim my sideburns. Andy said it looked like I had a haircut, but no, I don't. If I pull the hair out from behind my ears, it would probably almost cover them. And the hair up here in the front, if I pull that down, it's to my nose. That's how it's going here.
And we don't even want to talk about the back hair. So, Don, you're looking pretty shaggy, my friend.
George has back hair? Oh, no, the back. Oh, sorry. I meant, yeah. The only thing that's groomed on me is this. I finally broke down and shaved this. I thought about doing the full beard again, and then I just got sick of it. I have a very tragic, if you can see it, a very tragic cowlick back here that I've always had. I think it's on that side. Yeah, you can. Yes. Yeah, there it is. See it? Right there. Yeah. My grandfather was a barber, and I always remember as a kid, as my mother's dad, she would take me to his barber shop in Seminole, Oklahoma, old-fashioned barbershop where I learned what a razor strop was.
What is
and
that?
If you smart off to grandpa, you find out real quick what a razor strop is. It's a long piece of very, very wide leather, about like that my grandfather used to hone the straight razors on, and it made for a very, very good punishment item. To get one of those across your backside, you remembered it. But he used to always hate my little cowlick and my double crown. He used to hate cutting my hair. So, I still 60 years now later, I still hear about it when I go get my hair cut. You and your cowlick and your double crown.
Oh, Gordo, what about you? You letting Susie cut your hair for you?
Yes, she does a great job, and the rest is so she can find me when I'm out surfing.
There you go. I cut Jeff's the other day, very nervous about doing this, and he has like this whole fade thing that he does, and I watch, I watch 3 YouTube videos, and I nailed it. I'm pretty proud of myself.
Somebody in the chat room asked if I dyed my beard. Does this look dyed? No. God, no. If it was dyed, it wouldn't be gray.
No, he's going for Santa Claus next year. What are you talking about?
I used to have the whole big Charlie Daniels look, but it would be Santa Claus now at my age. So,
all right. One other thing, and I didn't know if Victor could go to this link. It's pretty cool. I was viewing it a little bit. Last Man Standing released their gag reel from this season. So everybody go to YouTube and search for Last Man Standing gag reel season 8 or something like that. And it's hilarious. So, and I know you're all Last Man Standing fans, right? So we got this going
Absolutely.
On. actually we have like 3 shows to catch up on. Okay. Let's wrap it up. It's been a great show full of information. I can't say enough about the docs. They're awesome. Thank you, Dr. Wright. Thank you, Dr. Harry. Let's go over some nets tonight. We have everything going on tonight. All the bands are cooperating. So we have 20 meters on 14268. We have 40 on 7192. D-Star and 14 Charlie and DMR on 31012. So thanks, everyone, for tuning in tonight. Hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. Who's wrapping it up?
Me, I guess. Yeah. The other way, George. Thank you.
It's always backwards of the way you think it is, Don.
It is. It really is. I know.
I don't know. Gordo was waving his hand. I thought he was volunteering.
No, I was actually pointing toward Don.
Oh, okay.
All right.
Well, it was hard for me to catch the corner there, but I thought maybe Gordo was saying, me. I got it.
Oh, now there's 2 of me. There's no good can come of this. All right, y'all. Listen, a great show. Amanda, a stellar job. Now we switched places. That's what it is. Okay. I'm constantly – see, now George is over. If I point that way.
I don't even know.
It's crazy.
Like,
I know.
Down
it's mirror image. Your growth on this show is just amazing. Your interview skills are I'm in awe. I really am. So I just want to get that out of the way. Good job
Thank
tonight, Amanda.
You. Thank you. I'm blushing a little bit.
Well, there you go. All right, guys, join us on the nets tonight, or join our net control operators. Some of the hosts will probably be on the nets tonight. I probably won't, because I still have work to do. iHeart work. Stuff wasn't done earlier. So now I'm hoping that at 9:30 that it's done and I can go back in there and finish my work day that started at 7 this morning. But anyway, that's not why you called.
Gordon, he's blaming it on that, but it was definitely day drinking. Go ahead, Don. Admit it.
No, not today. Not today. My work is not done until other people finish theirs. So I'm, you know what they say? You know what they say? Rolls downhill. Yeah, I'm at the bottom of the hill on that score there. So anyway, again, that's not why you called. Very important show tonight. I hope you got as much out of it as I did. I know for a fact I'm going to have to go back and probably rewatch it two or three times to get all the information that Dr. Scott and Dr. Harry gave to us tonight. And of course, they will be back as conditions warrant and as they have more information. And the main thing is stay inside. That's the important part. I know that with all this talk of reopening and everybody has cabin fever, I was speaking with my uncle, who is also a cardiologist, and we were talking the other night, and he's like, it's coming. There will be a second wave and probably a third and maybe a fourth if people don't stay their butts inside. That's the important thing. Tough it out now so that we can all flatten this curve and get out and resume normal life as we know it quicker. You got to make the sacrifice now. If you get out too early, this whole thing pops up again. And anyway, just listen to what the doctors say. And of course, use your common sense by all means. So, and with that, we wish you good night, good health. We appreciate you being here, and we'll see you. We'll talk to you on the air, and hopefully, and we'll see you back again next week here on Ham Nation on Twitch. So, good night, everybody.
Good night.